Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Sedwick.
It's October 25th, Siam. I said that today is the 10th anniversary of Civ 4's release.
Siam said it.
Well, look what his username is.
Yeah.
Yep, Siam.
We're going to say Siam instead of trying to pronounce it and mangle it like we normally do.
With us is Mad Jin.
La 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 la.
We got Dan Q.
What? Whoa.
We got Makalua waiting in the wings. The Mian Team.
I researched all the right technologies.
And I'm Sedwick, guest hosting this episode. Let's hope I'm interesting.
Well, you could at least be entertaining. I mean, if you're interesting, that's just bonus.
Of course.
That part matters a lot less.
Yeah.
Unless you're not entertaining, in which case you better be interesting.
Pretty much. Initially announced that a patch for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide will be released soon. And yes, that proved to be accurate. In addition to bug and user interface fixes, this patch introduces changes to the war score system and combat resolution, covert ops, and trade units that will have a major impact on the game. I'm not certain about the trade units thing having a major impact on the game, but okay for the other things.
Well, it's less annoying.
To, like, separate it, yeah. That's true. It's less annoying. That's major.
Yeah.
Now, with regards to the war score system and combat resolution and covert ops, I think that is put in the correct order. War score. Oh, my word.
I didn't get the game because of that. I might pick it up now. We'll see.
Nope. It's the Prison Rate Stale Horn.
Oh, is it?
I enjoyed actually the description that 2K Games, the publisher for Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide, gave before the patch was released, which was, in introducing war score to diplomacy, quote, gave players both a concrete indicator of how conflict against another faction was progressing and as a benchmark for the potential resolution of these conflicts, unquote. Actually, war score system did neither of those things.
Yay!
It gave you a benchmark, all right. It lets you know that you probably weren't going to be able to end the war.
Yep.
Because you would have to demand too much.
2K's explanation, and I'll put this in past tense, because when it was written, it was in present and future tense. A situation could arise in the game where a player could get so far ahead of an opponent's faction that no terms can end the conflict, because to do so would remove the opponent faction from the game.
And on that note, in Turncast-related news, the last Turncast, before this patch, I actually removed an AI from the map by making peace. I found a way.
Oh, yeah, you had the peace deal that was still sitting there from beforehand, and you'd already taken their capital, and it was basically all their other cities, so...
Yep, so I found a way to remove them from the map.
It worked.
Oh, man.
Probably not as intended, but...
That sounds like Mad Jin's embracing the EU4 strats and Beyond Earth to me.
You wrote bad game. I will break it. Thank you.
So now we have the Spoils of War system, which, quote, works on the difference in war score between the two sides. If an AI agrees to settle a conflict, players will see a new screen showing what technologies, yields, and cities they can demand of the loser. Each of these has an associated cost. The player can purchase these spoils up to the difference in war score. A winning player can choose to demand less than the full difference, and the AI will accept the lesser terms. Quote, unquote. I'm just going to stop for a second here. So we know, the AI will accept the lesser terms.
Most important word, can. That doesn't mean the AI is going to agree.
Oh, yeah.
Because the AI saying, screw you, we're going to be in this war forever, yeah, that still exists.
We're doing fine on our own.
Quote, likewise, if a player is losing a conflict and agrees to settle with an AI, they must pay out spoils of at least the difference in the war score. If the player cannot meet the full payment, the AI will recognize that the player is offering everything they can and accept accordingly, unquote. Really?
Really.
Okay.
So
if I make them an offer, and it's exactly the point score, they have to take it, even if it's a dumb offer?
No, they won't have to. But if you make an offer that's way less, then they might take it. But because it's the difference in war score, and because war score is based on the combat strength of units that have been killed and on some city-related numbers, you literally now can just sit there and farm AIs by killing all their units, letting them send more and more to you, building up a huge war score without even bothering trying to attack them, and then make them give you all their ticks.
Oh, just using that to attack. Okay, I was going to say, that seems like a rather suboptimal way to get cities, because you probably just take the cities. But yes, getting tech, yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
I like this alternate research plan.
I hate this alternate research plan.
It might turn out
I
to be the strongest.
It's an idiotic thing.
Yeah.
The technologies thing, which we initially glossed over, I kind of enjoyed that we waited just a few more moments before we went back to that. Guilds, cities, you know, not technologies outright, maybe some beakers per turn, but just outright technologies. Oh my gosh, that is
bringing back memories of Civ 4 tech trade.
I was going to say, there's a reason they removed that in the first place.
Also, especially if the AI is going purity, it goes right for the end wonder tech right away. Like, it just beelines that crap. Which means you don't have to actually tech. You can just sit there in an early war, just wait a little bit. They'll grab a couple of the deep techs, even though they don't give enough affinities for them to fight back yet. And then all of a sudden, now you have it all.
And you can defend yourself.
That too.
I also think Warscar needs to be able to force peace terms if there's enough differential between what you're asking in the Warscar. It needs to be able to do that.
Like the time I had 1,000 and they had 0?
Yeah. Ridiculous. The whole point of having that is to force terms. Otherwise, you don't need war score if you can't force terms.
Well, in theory, in the code, there are levels in the war score related stuff. You're roughly equal. If you've only killed a couple units, then there's, like, you're kind of winning, and then you're dominating. If you're dominating, then yes, you should automatically be able to force terms that are within a realistic realm of what you've done. But I never like the concept of you have to give up cities because I've killed a bunch of your units.
Like, well, you could make cities sufficient war score, though. Like, you could say, let's go on a scale of 0 to 100, and a city is 20. You're probably not going to get, like, a 30-40 war score differential to take a city off 20 war score by just killing units.
Yeah, I just think that there should be a trigger in there that you have to have at least attacked cities or taken one before you can start asking for them.
Yeah, maybe.
If you're just in a border war, basically, it shouldn't be like, okay, now give me your empire, because I kept you from expanding towards me.
Oh, I'm not sure I agree, though, because to get enough war score for that, you would need to kill a lot of units, in theory.
Yeah, and the AI is sending units to die across the map.
Yeah, but if it's doing that, you can just take the cities. It's not that hard.
No, like,
the difference
between
shredding its entire military forces and just taking a city then is not that big.
No, I'm talking about, like, the AI who will be allied to another AI who then attacks you across the map because they're pissy at you, and then you can't necessarily get to them because there's other people in the way, but they manage to get a navy through and you shred it because it's defensive, and they just never make peace because they have land units back at home, and so they keep sending more boats, but you don't want to go halfway across the planet to kill their cities, so you just sit there and kill all their units and get thousands upon thousands of war score.
See, now you're changing your story. First you said you can, now you say you don't want to. Yeah. Definitely, if they can bring a navy to you, you can do the same. And
if you sank their navy, you
can probably use whatever sank that navy, unless you're using pure land units, to go take their cities.
Well, if they're cooperative with another AI that's in the way that doesn't like you and doesn't let you through.
Yeah, I guess it's possible. That's not going to happen a lot, though. I don't think it's a big deal.
It happens a lot.
No.
They make buddy buddies quite often.
Yeah,
I know, but being completely unable to reach someone who can reach you and getting tons of war score on them, I mean, yeah, it could happen, but...
Yeah,
and then you can pick a city that you can't really defend in the future if you want. I mean, you can, sure.
Yeah, I just think it's bad. But realistically, on the war score thing, what I would suggest, and this is the thing I'm most sad about, is that there, again, is a lack of diplomacy in it.
Yes.
It's under the diplomacy heading, but there's a sheer lack of diplomacy. Where is the don't settle near me option in here? Say you have a border war and you smash up a bunch of outposts and then you go to make peace. Why don't you have an option in this thing to say, you cannot settle near me? It actually physically blocks the AI from settling within, say, 5 tiles of your lands.
It should block humans and AIs alike. And if you're going to make that a peace deal, why, give it a a hex range on your city.
Yeah, here's a hex range of all the current cities. Current cities, not future cities, because that's just kind of a dickish. Because then you start dropping cities all around them and you're like, bleh. No, but it'd have to be current cities that they're locked out of. Or break your alliance with that person. Or stop paying that person for a service. Say you have competitive services and you say, no, you can't buy that off of them. Or anything along that line. You know, actual diplomacy-related things. That would have been much nicer rather than the stupid text.
Yeah.
And when we're talking about diplomacy here as well, related to that, if one AI enters, say, an agreement with another AI, just like when we enter an agreement with an AI, we get the communiques from the AI saying, oh, that was a really good deal or that was a really bad deal. I would like to be able to do that as well. So then I can say, you know what? I am communicating to you that my respect of you has gone up or gone down based on this particular action. And I'm going to tell you that, and I'm going to know that, and that's going to be broadcast. But it also goes back to what we've said about Civilization V and these previous Civ titles as well, where the AI can say things to us and it has a game impact, but we cannot do the same thing. There is not the reciprocal.
Yeah.
That is also missing. That would also help with the diplomacy.
Yep.
But I will give, at least in theory, this Spoils of War system, I will give it credit in one particular sense. And that goes back to the demands that you can make. Each of these has an associated cost. The player can purchase these spoils up to the difference in war score. It removes, in theory, some of the guesswork, which is like the AI contacts you. Hey, let's get peace, like peace treaty for peace treaty. And you're thinking, I think you can do better than that. What is your best offer? What is the most that I can get out? Will you, and I'll put this in the context of, you know, energy and Beyond Earth, get 10 energy per turn? No. Okay, how about 9? No. Can I do 8? No. And you sit there and you sit there to try to get the best combination of things. At least with this on the screen, it gives me the sense that, okay, this can be my potential total, and I can mix and match the combinations of things that I want, and I think things are going to help me.
Yeah,
wearing it down could be a negotiation tactic, too.
Yeah, you could also burn all their stuff down. I will negotiate with you by burning it all down. Have fun with that.
Yes, instead of at the end of a stick, like we would say in Civilization V, I guess at the end of a laser.
Yeah, the concept is better than Civ V style even, or at least the way the Civ V style is written, because it's based on certain levels. And on certain levels, there's like 8 or 9 of them. The AI has a very fixed, this is what I'm going to give up for peace, or ask for peace. And you can't ask for something different and find out what equivalency things are. Like, if you hit the level where it has to give up half its empire of cities, then there's, like, no way for you to go, well, why don't you just give me all your gold and gold return and this sort of stuff? And be like, nope, nope, I don't know how to calculate that.
Very take it or leave it.
Yeah, especially when you don't want to take it, because it's too much.
Now, elsewhere in the patch, just about the covert ops thing, not as much detail provided in the patch notes, and this is new. Covert ops, of course, we mentioned, includes the black market section. By assigning an agent to this operation, you can trade diplomatic capital for strategic resources. Your agent's rank modifies the number of resources you can gain and the cost you pay for these resources. At a glance, I'm thinking this is going to be better for me than stealing technologies with my agents, stealing beakers, stealing energy, because why? Because if I'm doing all of those things, then I can just go and take those strategic resources for myself.
Well, it depends. I mean, sometimes you're in areas of the map where there's, like, no titanium at all, anywhere, or no oil, or blah, blah, blah. So sometimes we need just that little bit more. That may be a viable thing, although more strategic resources from thin air, sure, whatever. I don't see anywhere in here that they fix the trade routes to allies, giving you 3 of everything per trade route.
There's that as well. So you combine those things, and it's like, okay, it's nice to be able to do it, but it seems very situational, and it seems underwhelming, whereas the black market, I think we've talked about black market equivalents of covert ops and espionage for previous Civ titles, and it's like, yes, this is in. They've implemented it, but in the way they've implemented it, it seems like you've just barely got the foot in the door and you're barely scratching the surface. And there's other ways to get these things. So
yeah, they implemented the name.
Yeah, yes. Well, there we go. Baby steps, I suppose. Yeah,
baby
I suppose.
Steps. Name's in there. Now, granted, if they actually do fix trade routes somewhere along the way, so they stop giving you all the stuff, then it might be more functionally useful at some point versus other stuff. Maybe.
Yeah, at some point.
Especially with the brutally long covert op times now. If you're not the Ark, or the Ark's not your friend, or you don't take all the bonuses, or the other 2 bonuses that you could get,
True enough. Otherwise, from the list of changes, not going to read all of them. We've kind of hit on the major points, but there are some other secondary points as well, such as under diplomacy, fixed an issue that prevented AI allies from joining the war if they hadn't met the opponent and the war started before the alliance was formed. But my favorite, actually, from diplomacy, other than the big things here, fixed an issue where some AI leaders would send communiques inappropriately while at war. Now, that's not defined, but is that kind of like, I'm at war, and then you send me a message, I've lost respect for you because you don't improve your land.
Oh, I was thinking the ones where they compliment you. I'm at war with you, but good job on your spying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too.
Thanks for spying on me. You seem to have a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
I guess from both ends, it's kind of like you somehow respect me more, and you also hate me more as well. It's like, really?
I don't like you, but I respect you, if it's like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that unreasonable. I mean, if someone's owning you with something, you probably don't like them for it, but you're forced to respect them because they're starting to beat you.
Yeah, but shouldn't that be on the fear mechanic, though?
Probably, yes. Although, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
And we're also inferring what inappropriate communications are, so I hope that's what they mean.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait and see what that is. I don't know. I guess it's a fine line between love and hate.
I guess the point about preventing AI allies from joining a war if they haven't met the opponent, well, I've got a LP up where I was added to a war, and I didn't know the person. So apparently it worked for players, but not for AIs.
And I would also think kind of like, hey, you're my ally, so we're at war with this other faction? Oh, we don't know where that is. Well, guess what? You're an ally. I'm going to point you to where it is.
Yeah, you should tell me you'd pass.
How could you possibly send that to us? We only came from another planet and landed on this one. We don't have the ability to show you where things are. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do.
Yeah.
Right from the beginning, I don't care what point in Beyond Earth you're talking about. Ay, ay, ay. Of the four that I see on quests, I like that the quest update pop-ups now appear each time a new objective is received. Although I kind of want to say, is that in multiplayer as well as single player? Okay. Hey, baby steps. Back on Covert Ops, under AI, AI will now use Covert Ops better. Better prioritization, raising intrigue, and using higher level ops. And maybe it's just my troll response, but I thought, you said it's going to do better. You didn't say it was going to do it well, though, because you can go from 20% to 40%, but you're still failing. I guess, is this baby steps? Am I being too critical?
I don't know. I've seen the AI use coups. That's a higher level op. So
that's the highest level off.
Double.
Yeah. So I'm like, what else are they not doing then? Is there something above coups that we don't know about?
An increased AI desire for expansion via founding cities.
Mm-hmm. Spam.
It's kind of like even in Civilization V, it's like, so how many turns has it been? I've arrived here and you haven't settled over here because why? It's connected contiguously to the landmass that you're on. There's food here. There's resources here. There's access to whatever else it is. So you're not here because you can't manage the cities you already have. You don't know what you're doing. So I don't know what that means in terms of a percentage and practicality, but the fact that there is an increased AI desire, this is good. This is forward momentum.
I am concerned that the improved AI ratio of ranged to melee unit naval ships is basically going to be a nerf. I see lots and lots and lots of people complaining about, yeah, I build a lot of melee naval ships and then they smash all my cities. Yeah, well, guess what? The AI is actually kicking your ass. Good for you. So improving the ratio of ranged to melee is one thing. I mean, it would be nice. I've seen AIs build subs and destroyers and yada, yada, yada all together. But what more concerns me is that initially landed on land, don't build ships. That would have been the thing to fix.
If only.
Like, if the AI is going to settle in water, it should build a navy. Just like the player has to.
Yes, or at least should be.
Should be doing anyways.
Yeah, if you're going to settle on water, I mean, I suppose if it's, oh crap, it's a leak, then maybe you're not going to be so concerned about that. But if other players, AI or otherwise, even a multiplayer situation, right? I know we're talking about AI here, but still, someone else can get to you, you might want to protect it. And on the point about people complaining about the AI take with the melee units, I guess, and it also goes to, do you not have ships of your own in the vicinity? What is the affinity level of the AI versus you, and are you not constructing defensive buildings on the coast? I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, and I've actually had that happen, where an AI was doing that, and I was so used to in the situation of, like, in Civilization V, it's like, why would I build walls? The AI, you know, they're not going to be able to get to me. But then here it's like, oh, maybe on these coastal cities, I don't find it as an issue with land cities, but on coastal cities, it's like, yeah, maybe I should have that, so at least it gives the city a turn or two to defend itself a little longer before it gets taken.
Yep.
Possibly raised, captured, or whatever, so that I can either get units that I have back to protect it, or construct them, or buy them. Like, that's a good thing. More about what am I not doing correctly, as opposed to, oh, no, the AI is doing something correctly. Well,
yeah.
Oh, we're such a fickle bunch. I wish the AI would do stuff that's smart, and then the AI does something smart. Rawr!
You made them too smart.
I don't think smart's the right word for the AI still, but okay.
Yeah.
Put it this way. If somebody's complaining that the AI is actually doing something well, that's just a please go away.
just a little early in the learning curve is all. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Please don't make the AI get nerfed. It has to improve still. We don't want the AI nerfed.
Under art and user interface, added sorting functions to trade route overview. Thank you. So, demographics in the next... Oh, wait, maybe not.
Demographics have a long history in Civ, though, because like you got to the point where they were a little overstrong in the gameplay planning phase in the Civ 4 times.
Fixed an issue where certain expedition icons are not properly cleaned up when completed. Also, thank you, I thought that was just a let's make your explorers run around to places that they can't do anything anymore.
Yeah. So the ballad side of it, of the section, is actually amusing.
Yes, it is.
As much as WarScore went from, you use the word, now maybe next time you can build a mechanic, so they actually built a mechanic for the patch. Not a good one, but they did, at least, build one. In this case, they went, hey, we have all this stuff, and we thought it's awesome to have this all cheap, and they're super powerful, and blah, blah, blah. And then they balance it by basically making them almost not worth using again. Slow clap for that one, too. And specifically, I'm talking stuff like machine-assisted free will now reduces the cost of leaf text by 20%. It used to be all text by 30, so that's probably a better choice, but it costs 1,000 production. So not only do you need to find a bunch of progenitor runes and get the artifacts, and that takes a long time, then you now have to get 1,000 production, which makes it
an
endgame wonder.
To me.
It's an endgame wonder now, which is kind of stupid because the point of it is to give you faster tech before the end of the game. Yes, Sam.
Yeah, that was a little overdone in both directions.
Yay. Although 20% cost of reduction in cost of leaf text is actually pretty useful.
Yeah, if it wasn't 1,000 production, that's still a solid bonus. I mean, it's not game-breaking. You're not going to win on that alone, but it would still be good.
Yeah, but not at 1,000 production.
No.
Quantum Politics was the other one that got beat to death. It really got beat to death. It used to be plus 100% virtue acquisition rate. Go figure. So it's now down to 15%. So... And it costs 400 production. Yay.
I know it's not pertinent to too many of our listeners, but I'm just thinking about like what the League of Legends community would do if changes enacted to this extent in a game like that. Oh my gosh. The balance tuning. Wow.
That was not tuning. That was somebody thought, it'd be awesome to have all this super powerful stuff and we'll put that in at launch time because this is awesome. And then somebody else took them back to it and beat it to so badly that it's no longer even useful.
Well, it needed the bat, but it didn't need to be a dead horse.
Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And no candy dropped out.
Yeah, seriously. But anyways, other quote-unquote wonders that you would get through the artifact side of things now actually cost more production. They didn't have the abilities changed, so I guess that's okay. But all the artifact-based wonders all cost like 100 production. And it came up on the forum at one point. And people were like, well, why are these costing production or any production or whatever? And the whole point of it was it's technically a wonder to differentiate it from the quote-unquote bonuses you get from mixing artifacts that you don't have to pay for with production. And also, it's a wonder, so it'll get built in that city. So if you lose that city, you lose the wonder. At least that was the thought line. But you still have the whole entire must-find-all-the-artifacts first, and you might not even get them, especially for generator ones. So... yeah, there was at least that. But now it's like, you might as well just have these things on the tech tree, and then no one builds them.
Elsewhere in Balance, ultrasonic fence is a stronger deterrent to keeping aliens away. Okay.
That's cute that you said that, but the only reason to build it is to get the stupid tree group protection.
Yeah, pretty much. My strong deterrent to keeping the aliens away is having sufficient units in the appropriate places up the affinity progression to be able to go squish either offensively or to be able to defend. So, okay, that's nice.
Yeah.
And just going in order that they're presenting these points otherwise. On lowest difficulty, only one AI will start a war with a player at a time.
What if they're allied, though?
Oh, this is good, though. Turn 5, you're declared on. By one AI. Turn 6, this is a different time. You've also now been declared on by another AI. So I like how that is phrased. You can interpret what at a time means, but I interpret at a time as, oh yeah, at the same time, on a given turn. Okay, but then the next turn, anyway.
It's on the lowest difficulty, though.
Yeah. You'll be surprised if you get declared on at all.
Yeah.
Conquered or gifted cities will no longer inappropriately give free buildings or units. Okay, they will now appropriately give free buildings and units. Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, am I picking apart the language? I would not do that.
Well, you have to demand it in the peace deal now to take all their tax. You'll just get it taken the cities inappropriately, I guess.
Yeah, that'll be fine.
You have to be assertive. Okay, fair enough. And I like the smart grid agreement now has a 100 energy per turn cap to prevent runaway energy gains.
Yes, this was the we'll grow our energy. Compound interest rules the universe.
You know, I'm surprised, though. Like, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but I mean, come on. Like, that's the industry one in the base game for a reason, presumably.
Yeah.
So.
This is going to get capped. It's meant to be a service, and it's not even an expensive service. This should not be the I just hold 10
So why wasn't it capped in the first place? But okay, whatever.
Maybe there was just so much excitement about having agreements in the game that it's like, so when we do something like this, what have we done with comparable things in the past? How was that done? Oops. Yeah, we forgot about that.
Yep.
Oopsie.
Yeah.
Miscellaneous. Fixed an issue that would prevent players from raising a city after a capital has been transferred to another city.
Uh-huh.
Always helpful.
That's actually very useful.
Yeah.
The Lush Marvel quest now requires a player to biopsy a whole 5 alien remains, not just 3.
Is it going to be picky about which ones I pick?
I don't know. They have to biopsy 5 so that you can't leash colossal units by turn 30.
But.
Yeah.
Fixed an issue in Domination Victory when an alien destroys a capital.
Oops.
You can't win. The alien got to it before you.
Yeah.
That is trolltastic.
Yep.
Should have left that in there. Although my favorite 200 miscellaneous is first, fixed an issue where a base game achievement wouldn't trigger with DLC turned on.
Oh, whoops.
But the best part, because there's humor in it, you may now continue playing after being defeated, except when defeated by Domination.
Yep. Have fun. Keep going, except when you can't.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
Turn on observer mode and just watch the AI play, I guess.
Sell your services as a consultant.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, except if you got wiped out, I'm not really sure anybody wants your consulting.
Yeah.
Well, no. You can market it as, let us tell you what not to do.
Right.
It was a 39 megabyte update, so if you do not yet have it, you maybe been logged into Steam for a while, it hasn't been pushed yet, you can force that, restart that. On Sith Fanatics, DeVilio started a thread, patch notes for those who don't want to open that horrible website, to which not someone from 2K, which would have been more appropriate, but someone from Firaxis, the Firaxis Games community manager, Kevin Schultz, says, geez, I'm standing right here, people.
Then fix it. For the love of God, fix your freaking script issues.
But then he also went, just kidding, feedback noted. Now, Kevin didn't say that it would be acted upon. It just said that it was noted. Okay.
Haven't listened to a single complaint.
He did take the Twitter right about that point and said, like, because we released this sooner than everybody thought, that you're not allowed saying mean things about it. He went and responded, that's not in my contract.
Nice. On Facebook, Jackson Fleming said, this looks like a great improvement. It's good to see that you've taken what the fan base has said into account. Response, we always listen to our fans. We wouldn't exist without them! Exclamation point. That was Sid Meier's Civilization responding. And it's like, you listen, that's true, but you don't always act on it, but okay.
Or we hear you that this is a problem. We hear you that you would like it solved this way. Yeah, we'll be able to do this thing over here.
All your prayers get answered. Sometimes the answer is no.
Yep. Yada yada, it's not a bug, it's a feature. Yada yada, working as intended.
Yep.
Drake Smith, who maybe is Southern, he goes, are y'all trying to set some kind of record for timely patches? I'm impressed. The response, thank you. And, maybe, smiley face.
What, the BERT team actually put out a patch that has more than just a couple XML fixes?
Apparently.
That in itself is, like, a record for them.
Now, the one qualifier we do have to put in here, so you're playing the Mac version of Civilization Beyond Earth in Rising Tide. Yeah, Spire hasn't done anything with that just yet. I like Quasar on Steam who said, nothing for Mac. I'm in the middle of a really important war with the Slavic Federation here, and I want them to pay appropriately when I crush them. Completely divergent to everything else, but it's actually interesting. I set this topic 2 days before we recorded this, and then the day before we recorded this, suddenly there was an explosion of additional information and verification from other sources. And that is, there is another console, Civilization Revolution, coming out. But it's not Civilization Revolution 2. No. It's Civilization Revolution 2 Plus.
Okay.
Oh, God, did they change the art again?
And it's heading to the PlayStation Vita. Be the only thing right now. And from 9 different sources, this is what I've been able to cobble together. Quote, the newly developed intuitive controls and user interface works with the PlayStation Vita's touchscreen and button controls. 3 exclusive Japanese leaders will only be found on the PS Vita, along with 1 unique Japanese unit and 5 additional scenarios. Other articles talk about who the leaders are. One is focused on medieval era, get a samurai bonus. Another one has a naval combat-related bonus. And the third one has more diplomatic-related, government-related bonuses. No, I'm not going to try to pronounce these names. The names of the scenarios are identified that all take place at different points in Japanese history. The new unit is a battleship, which has improved attack strength and at the cost of compromised defense capability compared to normal battleships. It appears this will only be a download item from the PlayStation Store. No confirmation just yet on a physical release. And it is going to cost 5,300 yen, which is a hefty 30 pounds.
See? Hefty pounds. Eh?
Hefty pounds, yes. Ha ha ha.
And that's without the VAT. That's without the VAT for the British listeners.
It was initially only confirmed for Japan early in October, but at the end of the month, it's like, no, the PlayStation blog and the European Union and the United States has confirmed it. And in fact, the producer, a producer at 2K Games, Joe Falstick, actually published an article on the PlayStation blog. It has been rumored to be around for some time that this title first popped up 6 months ago via a Play Asia listing before being raided in May of this year. It will be out in time for Christmas, and another 2K title, XCOM Enemy Unknown, there will be an XCOM Enemy Unknown Plus for PlayStation Vita as well. So they're going this Plus route. Joe has been at 2K Games since April of this year, and in terms of other production credits, he was at Crystal Dynamics, he was at Microsoft for more than 2 years, and before that was at Irrational Games, so his title credits include BioShock and BioShock Infinite.
Eh, whatever. Doesn't really matter at this point. So, I mean, they're not going to just release it in Japan, because that would be idiotic. Not exactly a large market there. So, yes, they are going to try and release it elsewhere, because Derp, son of Vita. Other people pretend to buy them. But second to that, people pretend to buy the Vita. Yeah. So, really, throwing good money after bad.
I mean, hasn't Sony said they're not doing anything more with this thing? But apparently 2K is, so... Okay.
Well, hey, as long as they still make some money on something they probably didn't have to change too much to throw on there.
Yeah, it's like port and go. It's Plus, guys.
Although, I will say, they are putting more on this than they did on Civilization Revolution 2 versus Civilization Revolution, which was essentially, hey, we added a few new techs and gave you a couple new leaders.
And put a 2 on it.
Now with the Plus, we're going to give you, there's going to be a unique unit, there's going to be 5 additional scenarios, there's going to be 3 Japanese leaders. We're going to optimize it, actually, whatever, of course, obviously for the interface.
And for the Vita.
But if you're thinking, can we get another console Civ title that is not just for handheld?
Sid said no.
Apparently not.
Yeah, Sid said no. I asked.
Okay, then.
I'd have to imagine the consoles are catching up enough that you could port things to the consoles.
Well, no, it's more the fact that they tried to make Civ Rev for consoles and it just didn't sell enough as far as they were concerned.
No, it's probably not surprising.
Yeah.
The controls for turn-based strategy on and real-time strategy, for that matter, are pretty tough to manage on consoles.
Yeah, it was actually perfectly fine. Yeah, high-speed gaming, high-speed multiplayer was pretty straightforward. They had functional issues with it that would cause you some problems. Lots of test code was still in there, so you could crush, basically fold all the defenses in a city and take it with a single unit.
There's not enough player base, huh?
No, there's a decent player base, but it didn't sell. Like, there was more of a player base after they stopped patching it than before. And, of course, Microsoft's hatred of actually patching stuff on the console. You have to pay Microsoft after a certain point. So, yeah, it's not a business model really works well for that. So you have to learn how to do math properly in the first place and then release the game rather than patch it later.
It's a lost art.
Yep.
I was just thinking they could probably get away with porting stuff, but maybe not under those conditions.
Yeah.
And just like Civilization Revolution 2, Firaxis Games has not to do with Civilization Revolution 2 Plus.
Yep.
But it's like, guess what? Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide is not the only Civilization title being released in 2015. Who knew?
Who knew?
Woo!
Somebody. Somewhere. Probably.
Episode 240 feedback. Two threads here. One of them has a little bit more content than the other, particularly from poster Ruben. I'm not sure what he means by a soft episode. I was sick that day, so I wasn't able to do this particular episode, unfortunately. Did he mean, like, in terms of volume, or was it something else?
No, I think he meant just in terms of the content, happy, optimistic,
fair enough,
lighthearted.
Fair enough. Oh, it was
I thought they were too critical, guys.
Well, he's himself critical of the game, so that's probably why he feels that way. He said it generally got favorable reviews, but it's still a mediocre title and not swayed by the novelty of it. So, yeah, he's probably feeling that exhausted because it wasn't criticized sufficiently.
Oh, and more specifically, scoring a title based on potential and post-patch speculation is wrong and very misleading. Dan.
I did not do that.
You did, too.
No, I did not.
You did.
No, I did not. My score was based on the game at release.
Nope, it was not. You kept talking about there's potential for the post-patch speculation stuff.
Yes, and there was potential, in which case the score would go up. I was not saying that I'm basing my score of 75 then because of the potential. It was 75 right now. If they did something with patches that improved it, then that percentage would go up.
Are you absolutely sure that you did not generate your score with at least some degree of bias based on your hope and perception of future improvements to the game, however?
That describes every reviewer.
There's no such thing as an unbiased review.
I'm just saying, if you think it's going to get better and you really believe that, then that's probably coloring your score to a degree, and then Ruben has a point.
Yep.
But then if you think the game is not going to do well, and it's not going to improve, then that also colors your view.
So absolutely. It's a thing in both directions.
No, I'm telling you, I based it upon release, and I stand by that.
Okay.
Anyways, more stuff happened.
Well, Dan responded to Ruben, but he did that in the thread. Could be checked out.
Ruben thought the best part was the guests, especially Nicole, because his play style is so different. And I just simply said, we try to get as many representations of different perspectives and play styles of Civilization as we can on this show. Also to that end, from the first thread, Legalized Freedom said he liked the idea of mini-interviews. And I said, we did that for the first time last fall when we were talking about Beyond Earth being released, and that seemed to work well because we got positive feedback for it then, and we're getting positive feedback for it now. We haven't gotten any negative feedback for it yet.
Wait for it.
Where are the challenges going to be? Some of the things we know how to do are not going to be very risky, but other parts of the project where it's like, we're going to try this brand new thing, or we're going to try to invent some new style of gameplay that we've never had before. And I think for Civ 5, it was, will hexes work? You know, things like that. Will one unit per tile work? There were a lot of core changes that were flipping the established model on its head.
The video of the retrospective.
This was a panel from Firaxicon. It was published on October 3rd on GameSpot's channel. It had Dennis Shirk and Ed Beach from Firaxis Games. Ed Beach came on as the designer for the two expansion packs, and Dennis was the producer across the base game as well as the expansion packs.
Each game of Civ has a different way that they present their leaders. We've done it where they just reacted. They didn't say anything. The text said it. And then they just make gestures in the background, like, you know, Civilization 3 or Civilization 2, they had pre-canned animations. Civ Rev, we had Fraxlish, which exactly half the people in here hate and the other half think is amusing and funny. So what do we do to elevate this? We have to do very realistic scenes. John thought it was very important to have these guys in their environment. It gives them extra context, really gives them extra flavor. So what if we do real-world languages? This would be cool. It would be a first for us. So one of the problems that we have with that is finding actors that can do difficult or dead languages, and also the experts needed to actually translate our scripts into something that we can use.
That was interesting, getting the takes on how the development process unfolded, particularly finding the name for the expansions.
I was thinking gameplay. I had no idea about name right away, so I gave him a quick response. I knew that the first expansion was going to have religion in it. Religion was going to be really important in the Middle Ages and Renaissance. I also knew that we had planned some scenarios to go with each of the expansions, and I was going to do a big scenario on the Renaissance period. So my first answer was Renaissance, and we actually went with Renaissance probably for 4 or 5 months. That was the plans. Marketing came and met with us, and we were planning to roll that out as the definitive name for the first expansion. We thought it had a positive meaning for the series. But then we kept having problems. There were people that couldn't spell Renaissance. Does it have one N? Does it have two N's? Does it have one S? How many vowels does it have where? Internally.
Everybody learned to spell Renaissance after those 5 months were up, internally.
But we kept realizing other people aren't going to be able to hang with that. So we took another look at it. We thought about, could we simplify it? What's the core essence of what we're doing? And that's obviously how we ended up with Gods and Kings for the name for the first expansion.
DDR. Why not?
Really?
Renaissance! Oh.
But now we don't get to see the signs with three N's in Renaissance.
Which also competed with a movie, but hey, too bad.
I mean, people use medieval all the time, and that's commonly misspelled. I don't see the big deal, but whatever.
People don't know how to use a freaking spell checker or autocorrect. Yeah. That's really not a good reason to not.
Oh, I've been burned by autocorrect before, though.
Oh, yeah. Autocorrect does some fun stuff, but.
Yeah. Then we got to a second expansion. We also had to come up with a name. And again, Dennis came with me, and we knew we were going to have a World Congress. We knew that we were going to focus on the modern through the end of the game, so it was going to be post-Renaissance. But it was really going to be focusing on kind of the globalization of the world in the 20th century. And so One World was the first name that we came up with. It seemed to make sense. It didn't seem like there was anything out there that had used that exact name before.
Didn't seem,
yes. That was the problem. I think we were 6 months from releasing Brave New World, and we still had One World as the name. And then I saw some ads on TV for the upcoming Survivor season, and they were also going to call their season Survivor One World. And we started thinking about it, and did we
vote
want
it off?
Yeah. Dennis voted that one off the island. So we started going back to the drawing board. And the next thing that came to mind...
New World Order would have been kind of interesting, right? Great athlete Hulk Hogan has been born in your city. But
when we found out there was a wrestling event, that probably sealed the deal right there that we had to axe that.
And it was at this point that I was starting to really think about the ideology system and figure out how the conflict between communism, fascism, and democratic people was going to play out. I started thinking about kind of literature we were putting great works in. So I started thinking about that literature of the early 20th century period. Huxley's Brave New World came to mind. I threw that out as an idea, and that has stuck.
Dennis talked about the process.
What are the primary goals of a prototype stage? There's a couple things that need to happen for this team to really have an idea, start the process, and come to fruition. And there's two things. One is a vision for the game. They've got to have a vision that they can sell, not only to the director team at Firaxis, to everybody gives the thumbs ups that goes, I like it, but then again to 2K, because 2K is going to basically say, that sounds great, we're behind it, let's forge ahead and really start putting all the cogs into place, assembling the team. And the other is just building the prototype itself. What does the design team do to create a prototype to basically show 2K that this game is going to be working? And for somebody like John Schaefer, who at the time was an avid modder of Civilization IV, he makes it in Civilization IV. We had some very specific needs that we wanted in our new game. And so the graphics team went to work on building one, but this was going to take time, thus the prototyping within Civilization IV. That game existed in Civilization IV for quite some time in the development. Final graphics work, the things that really make it shine, are going to happen in those last few months, because you can get to a certain point, but it's the last 20%. When you get 0 to 80%, you're going to see some differences, but the last 20% really makes
a
huge difference.
8 months before we shipped, right?
Yeah, 8 months before you shipped, but not just 8 months. There comes a point when you have to stop that graphics work. You're going to get into alpha, and you should be pretty locked down by that point.
People got to see a very early version of the introductory movie, the first visual set of imagery.
Every Civilization game has an intro movie. Every Civilization game had some sort of montage. And it happens over and over and over again because we have a game that is completely wide open, right? So how do you make a story-driven intro movie for a game that's basically played differently by the player every time? And that's always been a challenge. So we've always had these same montages of history because we couldn't really think of a better way to approach this. So with Civilization V, we wanted to attack this in a different way. We wanted to put a face on this that really gave it a human face. The best way we could do that, we thought, is to have a character, one character. Now, one of the funny things is, this is normally stuff that's never released. Marketing and PR is not normally fans of us releasing stuff that's super not done. You know what I mean? It's not something that they normally like to do. But this is really cool.
Four different engineers worked on the AI systems.
And the way we made that happen is we broke it up into different components. But part of that process of figuring out how the AI was going to be put together was sort of figuring out what the difficult spots were going to be, what our challenges were. And I identified three or four different things here. One is just that Civilization is such a long game. If it takes 20 hours to get all the way towards the end of the game, it's going to be tough to test and balance those systems that just require that much time to be put in to get to it. The other thing is not the same game every time you play. That's what makes it so wonderful. But it means that the AI is going to react differently to a new situation, and that's going to make it tough to create an AI that you know exactly how it's going to behave in every situation. We also planned for Civ 5 that we were going to have a lot of unique different play styles for the different Civs, a lot of different bonuses. And then, even though we had a good plan for segmenting the work and dividing the AI up into the different component subsystems that was going to allow us to work on that independently, how do we ensure that those AI subsystems are going to talk together right, communicate, they're going to be aware of what's going on, they're going to have share a common viewpoint on the game world?
There was an autoplay system where the AI plays head-to-head with each other for as many turns as you want.
And after the autoplay session takes that break, you can have it return as any of the different players in the game so you can see what the game world looks like from that player's point of view. Kind of from that simple start, we were able to get a lot of analysis of how the AI was balanced, how well it was performing. And one way we do that is by just generating a huge amount of logged data, kind of recording every single decision the AI makes so we can go back and analyze it.
Someone asked
how the AI process works when you're developing it. Is it a lot of getting basically really good players and trying to understand what basic good strategies are? Or is there a lot of just trying lots of random different things and seeing what floats to the top?
I think it's more the former. And one tool that we have that's a very useful tool is we have a secret but not so secret external group of testers. A lot of them are really, really strong players of the series. We have some wide range of ability levels there as well because we want to test the game from as many different angles as possible. But those people are very, very good at identifying core strategies that are going to win, where AI may be weak. And one of the things that we did with that external group is we would actually ask them for what we considered AI bloopers. So anytime the AI was just obviously making a poor decision or was obviously taking a strategic path that wasn't, you know, going to end up being a dead end, we'd have those people kind of either send us games where they could demonstrate that or just describe it to us. And those were always great areas for us to shore up the AI. And in terms of just trying a bunch of different things, we sort of got the trying a bunch of different things naturally from the AI autoplay system.
But my favorite quote came from Ed Beach towards the end.
I actually, myself, have never beaten Deity. I haven't gone on a huge series of runs to try to beat it. I like to be able to play sort of without trying to exploit the AI all the time, so I've only beaten Immortal myself.
LOL.
That's from the lead designer.
He also said, I play on the difficulty level as designed by the designer. Like,
is he the guy who started like 2,000 hours? I mean, you know, that's like 4 years of 10-hour Saturdays.
I just enjoy the Deity equals exploiting the AI all the time quote. I thought that's And why aren't there lots of threads about this already? What?
And to be fair, he was mentioning that in context of a question that was asked of him. He was asked by a person how to beat Deity, like what type of tips, and so that was his response.
You don't really need to, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you can certainly exploit the heck out of it, but you don't need to win.
And then, because Dan's purposely refusing to say it, he turned around and told the guy to actually go watch my channel.
I figured I had the honor of saying that, so I left it to you.
Could have at least said it. Now you're making me say it. Yeesh.
Yeah? I knew you would bring it up if I didn't, so I thought I won't bring it up and then imagine to bring it up, and that way no one can accuse me of monologuing this topic. When...
And to be fair, I do have 3,220 hours in Civ 5 that people know of.
Yeah, people know.
In 2011, Polycast switched from pre-recording to live recording its episodes. Another decision made at this time was collapsing the segment Time Machine, looking back at key moments in Civ history, into Miscellaneous, or under Miscellaneous if you prefer. Now in 2015, we're reversing this decision, because it's our prerogative, and for the first time since episode 94 in June 2010, we present to you a Time Machine segment. Then in June 2010, we were reviewing initial naysayers about Civilization IV. Today, we observe, yes, 10 years since Civilization IV was first released October 26, 2005. Designed by Soren Johnson, while a developer for Axis Games, Civilization IV was first released in North America, Europe, and Australia between October 25th and November 4th of that year.
It follows the 4X model of turn-based strategy games, a genre in which players control an empire and explore, expand, exploit, and exterminate by having the player attempt to lead a modest group of peoples from a base with initially scarce resources into a successful empire or civilization. There are by default 5 objectives the player can pursue in order to finish the game.
These are conquering all other civilizations, controlling a considerable majority of the game world's land and population, building and sending the first sleeper ship to the Alpha Centauri star system, increasing the culture ratings, or at least 3 different cities to legendary levels, or winning a world leader popularity contest by the United Nations via nuking the population of all the people who would vote against you.
If the time limit for the game is reached and none of the previous goals have been fulfilled by any players, including game AI players, the civilization with the highest total game score is declared the winner. The game can be played in multiple modes as a single player facing each one or more computer-controlled opponents or through online multiplayer games.
Large departure from earlier Civilization games is a new graphics engine created from scratch. This decision resulted in a full 3D immersion of the game, which was the first in the series. The game has generally received nearly universal acclaim and was hailed as an example product of one of the leading video game producers in the turn-based strategy genre. Critics pointed out functions in the game which could have been improved to better enhance their enjoyment of the game.
By the end of March in 2008, the game sold over 3 million units, and in 2010, Civ 4's title theme garnered the first Grammy Award nomination and win for any video game. Firaxis released 2 expansion packs, Civilization IV Warlords and Civilization IV Beyond the Sword, as well as the standalone games, Civilization IV Colonization, which were all combined into one release edition titled Sid Meier's Civilization IV The Complete Edition. Civilization IV, happy anniversary.
Woo!
Yay!
Fanfare.
Yes, indeed.
And if you want to listen to topics about Civilization IV, well, that was the near exclusive domain of Polycast coverage between seasons 1 and 4.
Yeah, we totally started this to talk about Civ 3.
And we totally won on score all the time in Turncast.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. No.
Today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Apparently, ARK has reached 2 million in sales prior to official release, which is kind of nice. If you want to write a dino, then that's... and it even beat out Valzone Counter-Strike and Rockstar's GTA 5 during the period. Very nice. Good ARK. Also, pre-orders for Fallout 4 are coming. Weirdly, this War of Mine is still in the top 10.
Talking about top Steam sellers from October 4th to 10th.
Yeah.
Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide was 5th, and then on the 11th to the 17th, 8th, but Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide did not place October 18th to the 24th. They're not in the top 10. They could get back there again. We've seen oddities in the past where it's like, hey, after almost a year, Civilization 5 is back in the top 10. Say, what?
Yeah, that's not going to happen with Bert.
Throwdown.
The week Bert came out, it had top 5 position. The next week, it was still in the top 10. And the third week, it was not in the top 10. Compare that to Beyond Earth, which sold a lot more. Most bought game that was never played. Go figure.
Thank you for joining us on Polycast episode 241. I am the Mean Team, and as usual, is joined by regular co-hosts Dan Q.
How excited are you now?
Makalua.
Is that the kind of questions you want to be asking our listeners, Dan, really?
Imagine.
Well, it's better than him asking about other stuff, like, how would you like to get those?
Very much. And guest co-host, Sedwick.
Thanks, guys. It was a blast.
Would you be willing to come back on the show?
I would, yeah. This was great. The week after Christmas, the week that includes New Year's Day, I'll be off work, so maybe I have more research time then, if you record an episode.
Research? Research?
Wait a minute. Are you trying to book your next appearance right now?
Just a suggestion.
Well, that's new.
That's the first time we had someone do that. Can I book myself in for this day?
Clicking link and says page can't be displayed.
Oh.
I'm going to go offline very briefly to reset my router and modem. It will not be long, but yeah, if I drop, that's why.
All right. What's next?
I think that's me.
Yep.
Dan gave me another thread by a name that I can't pronounce effectively.
You're welcome.
But I will try.
It's so much fun actually blocking out the movie. When you're actually looking at it, you can see right away the things that aren't going to work. Like, you're like, that hug is really awkward when you see it.
These are conquering all other civilizations, conquering all other civilizations, conquering all other civilizations, and conquering all other civilizations.
That's not how it works, Phil.
Oh, my bad.
We don't need how Phil plays it.
When 2K came knocking on our email door going, guys, we can't show burning humans alive. And we were like, it actually happened, why not? We can add more flames, we can consume it. You know, we don't have to show it. And he was like, no, it's E10.
The legendary levels for winning a world leader popularity contest by the United Nations via nuking the population of all the people who would vote against you.
Funny you're about to start to say United States. You cut yourself, that was good.
I wanted to finish saying it anyway, but I didn't.
Mind out of the gutter.
Come on.
Seriously?
I thought that went without
what
saying.
Said.
Now, Mackie, if I didn't say it, someone else was going to.
Yes, Phil, probably, but still.
Hey, now, I might not have said anything. Until later.
Anyway, I can't
correcting
read this.
Grammar for him here.
Yeah, I can't read that line. I literally can't read it. I refuse.
Especially that time where I farmed over all my cottages just to beat Dan. It was such good times.
And I remember that weekend Phil wasn't around to play. It was great. And
then I just showed up as an AI, like, 2 hours into the game and drafted rifles and conquered my way into second place and permanently allied the first place person. That was good, too.
And then there was that second weekend when Phil wasn't around to play. It was great.
If only.
Oh, no, it's, very loud. Thank you, Mackie.
Oh, sorry, Stefan. I don't know why it's doing that. I only have the internet open. Why is it running?
All these videos were basically used that get fired off to some team member and is saying, something's not working here. And then you look at them, like, now 5 years later, and it's like, wow, that's pretty funny.
Don't delete your email.
Oh, we got cut off where Phil says silence.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Recorded October 31st, 2015. For Axicon 2015 clips, copyright 2K Games. Bobby Yetu guitar instrumental performed by Versus Mode. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.